Okay, everybody, let's play Who Wants to Volunteer in Your Community? We'll start with Sam from Mobile, Alabama.
Wait, hold on. I don't want to volunteer.
Why not, Sam? We know you have the free time because you do absolutely nothing after school but sit in front of your computer.
Wait, you've been following me?
Yes, we have, Sam.
Yeah, that's weird.
So, let's have beautiful Cynthia here tell you what you could be doing.
Thanks, Bob. Hi, Samuel.
Hello?
Sam, you could take your computer knowledge and volunteer to teach people after school.
But I
don't know a thing about computers, but I'd love for you to teach me, Sammy.
Wow,
indeed. Looks like we have another happy volunteer. To find out ways you can volunteer in your community, log on to teensvolunteer.org and join us next time for another episode of Who Wants to Volunteer in Your Community?
Okay.
Do what you like to do. Volunteer. A public service message brought to you by the USA Freedom Corps, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the Ad Council.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the Internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The topic today is poverty and race in the wake of Katrina, problems and solutions. And if you're just tuning in now, well, you missed the first hour of the debate, which I had on the Jim Greenfield Show, my fellow talk show host who precedes me right here on the TalkStar Radio Network. Jim and I don't agree on much, but we both like being here on the TalkStar Radio Network. That's about all we agree on. But if you missed that first hour, that's okay. We've got a lot more to talk about in the next hour. And it's interesting because I think Katrina brought to a lot of middle-class Americans, a lot of white Americans, it uncovered the veil, if you will, of the continued problems of race and poverty in America. I think a lot of whites, I'm sorry to say, turn their heads the other way and don't want to focus on issues of race and poverty. Middle class people don't want to focus on poverty. And the question is, and I think it's a question that has to be asked, you have to confront it directly head on, it is a fact, no one denies it, that blacks are poorer at a greater percentage than whites. And you have to ask yourself why that is. Why is it? And I think all you have to do is look at the dramatic history of our government involved in institutional racism to know why blacks are poorer than whites, to know the legacy of slavery. And it's my view that when the government does damage, it's got a duty to help the people. Now, Jim said just before the break that you lift the weight. But, you know, when you got two runners in a race, and one has a heavy weight and the other one doesn't, and the one without the weight sprints and is now a mile ahead in the race, okay, is the only thing left to do lift the weight on the guy that's a mile behind? Or do you take steps to help make that runner who's been unfairly pushed behind to give them a break back to equal opportunity, equality, the chance to an equal education, which we don't have in this country, an equal opportunity to attend college? Jim Greenfield in the last hour mentioned the GI Bill, but in the South, the GI Bill was just given to the whites. Black veterans got nothing. So the question is not only what steps do we take to lessen poverty in America, to lessen the differences between whites and blacks in America, but who is best to carry it out? Who is best to do this in our government? Those that believe in government helping people, or those that think the government really can't help people? If we look at FEMA, we see that those that didn't believe in the mission of FEMA, understandably, didn't do such a good job. Whereas those that did believe, professional emergency managers, like James Lee Witt under the Bill Clinton era, they did a better job. And wouldn't it be better to put together a whole bunch of experts, the very best in the country, out there helping hurricanes across the nation? Or is it best to leave it to the states, as Jim suggested, and maybe have Texas officials separated by Louisiana officials in Alabama and Mississippi and Florida and North Carolina and South Carolina, and the best will be scattered across the country, and Alabama will just take care of that little strip of Alabama that reaches the coast? Some things do work. Sometimes federal government does work. And I think the best government programs are done by those that believe in them. So I want to welcome Jim back to the show, now to my show. And Jim, I want to ask you the question that I don't think I got a clear answer for in the hour on your show. And that's the question of, if you're hiring someone for a job, would you hire someone who believes in the job or hire someone who doesn't believe in the job, or do you think it doesn't matter at all?
That's a trick question.
Well, it may be, but is it a fair question? I mean, if you're going to hire someone for emergency management...
I mean, you know, there's only one answer to the question. I mean,
obviously,
you're trying to make a point, which I guess if I say, well, gee, let me scratch my head there. If I'm hiring somebody for a job, do I want to hire someone who believes in it?
Of course you do. Right, it's an obvious answer.
Yeah, so I'm supposed to say, oh, yes, you hire someone who believes in it, and you say, well, therefore you should hire liberals to run government bureaucracy.
You should
hire... believe in government bureaucracy and conservatives don't believe in government bureaucracy?
Well, here's the answer. If you don't believe in FEMA, if you don't believe in HUD, the Housing Urban Development Programs, you can, I think, consistently, logically, as a conservative, say end it, as they wanted to end the Department of Education.
Yeah, if you want to end it, why not end it? Why hire anybody?
Well, I agree that the logical conservative solution to government programs is just to end them.
Exactly.
But can we agree with this?
Okay. Let me just ask you this,
and then I'll...
Without any confusion, I am not in favor of hiring people to run government bureaucracies, which I don't think should exist. So, in other words...
Here's the point.
You know, if I'm king, the issue doesn't arise.
Right, if you're king...
Whether I hire someone who believes in that bureaucracy or doesn't believe
right.
in that bureaucracy...
Let's agree on this.
I doubt if it arises when George Bush hires people also. I doubt if he says to a guy, let's see, do you believe in the function this agency performed? The guy says, nah, and George says, okay, well, I'm going to hire you anyway because I don't believe in it either. Is that what we're talking about here?
Well, that's exactly what we're talking about here. You have FEMA. You got a guy who apparently was fired for judging Arabian racehorses badly, who was a political operative, who did help him in the campaign.
I'm not in this fight, Mark. You want me to take the position?
I just want you to be honest with me.
The best choice to be head of FEMA? I'm not going to make that argument.
Good.
I don't know.
Good. I just
want
you to agree with me of this, that you can agree as a conservative to shut down the government program, and you can agree as a liberal to have a government program, but let's both agree that as long as FEMA exists and Department of Education and Department of Housing and Urban Development, it's best to hire people who believe those programs can do good than to hire people who really don't care.
If you're trying to ask me to take the position in order to play the bad guy on this show, that the government should hire incompetent people to run the agencies that it has,
Jim, we're coming up on a break. We're coming up on a break. I think you agree with me. Best to hire the people who believe that government can work. We'll be right back. 877-528-TALK right after this.
Do you sell dietary supplements? If so, you may know that the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission regulate your sales presentations. Violation of the federal rules can lead to stiff penalties. You really must know the law. Fortunately, help is just a phone call away. Law Talk Incorporated has produced a CD series, 4-CD interviews with renowned attorney Jonathan W. E. Mord that explain the legal limits on sales presentations. The CD series guides you through FDA and FTC regulation, explaining the law that governs sales presentations, website content, and health claims, as well as global restrictions on supplement sales. This is a must-buy for network marketers and supplement companies alike. To obtain the CD series, call 1-888-RU-FREE-1. 1-888-RU-FREE-1. That's 1-888-783-7331. Call today.
Daddy, I think Bullet wants to go outside.
Then take him, son. Sure, he's a Great Dane, meaner and 100 pounds heavier than you. Sure, he's strong enough to tow an SUV, but you're a Peterson, and at 4, you're a man. So take Bullet's chain and wrap it around your wrist twice.
Like this?
I use both hands, but hey. Now show him who's boss. Let him know who's top of the food chain.
But I'm afraid I could get hurt.
I'm afraid I don't understand. Just keep him away from that cat.
Come on, boy.
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult. So why put them in adult seat belts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Daddy!
They can spit that cat out this instant.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm discussing poverty and race in the wake of Katrina with my fellow talk show host Jim Greenfield, whose show, the Jim Greenfield Show, precedes mine right here on the Talkstar Radio Network. And just before the break, Jim, not surprisingly, agreed with me that as long as you're going to have a government program, it's better to hire people who believe in it than people who don't believe in it. I think, as he says, it's a trick question. It goes without saying, that's obvious. But really, the next question then, I think, for Jim Greenfield, is does he believe that programs like FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, should exist at all? Or is the answer that we should divide our hurricane experts up among North Carolina and South Carolina and Texas and Virginia and Florida so that we have, you know, 12 different, in the Gulf Coast, we have four or five different agencies preparing for it rather than one coordinated federal response? What do you think, Jim?
Well, I'll tell you, Mark, I'm troubled by the concept that people who are shoveling snow in North Dakota should have to pay higher taxes in order to subsidize the lifestyle of people who choose to live in Florida or Louisiana on the Gulf Coast.
Well, you have a point, but we also pay for earthquakes in California. We do pay for massive floods and snowfalls in North Dakota.
Fine. Live in California. If there's an earthquake, you should pay for it yourself or buy insurance. Why should I have to pay for it? I chose not to live there.
Well, I think that part of it is that Americans look out for each other, and that's why we've seen such an outpouring after Hurricane Katrina. I have no problem saying that when a once-in-a-lifetime, or at least once-in-a-decade hurricane like Katrina comes along, that we use the best our government has to offer to try to save people's lives. And I actually don't think the people in North Dakota are too bothered by that. I mean,
well,
maybe I'm wrong.
I haven't thought about it.
I mean, if you were in trouble, you would want your neighbors to look out for you.
Think about whether you really want to do that. Do you really want to pay for higher taxes because people in Florida who are choosing to live right on the beach, where there's a tremendous risk of flooding and hurricanes, can't get insurance because insurance companies won't insure the risk because it's so high. So you get to pay to subsidize that lifestyle, and you're out there in the blizzard putting your chains on your
car. Well, I don't necessarily...
Do you really want to pay to higher taxes for that? I'll bet if you get most people thinking about that, if you put it that way, they're going to say, wait a minute, you know, why am I paying for that?
I'll tell you what, Jim. I agree that if people can't get insurance because they're in such a dangerous place, then maybe they deserve the property damage. But when lives are at risk, I absolutely think the government should intervene. I'll tell you why. I happen to live in Washington, D.C. Now, I chose to live in Washington, D.C., a place that, because it's the nation's capital, is more likely to get a terrorist threat, admittedly, than New Orleans. People in New York City are like more likely to get a terrorist threat. People in North Dakota are...
I'd say the odds are that it's going to happen, and I wouldn't live there if I were
you. Well, people in North Dakota are more likely to get a massive blizzard that leads to loss of life. People in California are more likely to get earthquakes. I mean, you know, to me...
I'll take my chances in the blizzard over the Al-Qaeda nuclear...
Well, I don't know. I don't know where you're going to live, because every place in America has some... There are places in America you can move out, perhaps, to the middle of Nebraska, and there are tornadoes there. Or you can maybe move, I don't know, someplace in upstate New York where there are no tornadoes or hurricanes or snowstorms, but there's bad economic opportunities. There are all places to live in America. I think the heart of our philosophical difference, Jim, and I want to see if you agree with me, that the heart of where we differ is that I think of our nation as one great society, to use a phrase. We are all in this together, and that insurance policies, the fact that as a nation, we can weather New Orleans, even though New Orleans as a city can't. As a nation, we can weather 9/11, even though the people of southern Manhattan probably couldn't handle it alone, that with our great wealth and numbers, we can protect each other in a way that if we lived all alone, we couldn't. What's wrong with that?
You know what? You can weather one disaster. You can endure the costs of one program. But what we're in a situation, Mark, where the layers of bureaucracy are building up so fast, and the level of government spending is going up so fast. And you know, it's gone up 33% since George Bush took office, some of which is explained by the war in Iraq, but not all of it.
No, a lot of it's the tax cuts.
You may also be aware that we have this small little problem looming on the horizon, that we've got $70 trillion in unfunded liabilities for Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid entitlement programs over the next two generations.
It's horrible.
Which, if nothing is done about, will absolutely bankrupt the Treasury.
You're
of the
absolutely
United States
right.
Government. And will destroy our economy.
You're absolutely right. So let's end the war in Iraq.
Adding bureaucracy onto bureaucracy onto bureaucracy and think it's going to go on forever and it's never going to come back to destroy us, it will.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I have always decried the massive government spending of this administration, and I think if we end the war in Iraq and we return the estate tax where people who've never worked a day in their life are earning hundreds of millions of dollars just for being lucky enough to be born in the right family, if we continue to tax that...
compared to the unfunded liabilities that our government faces.
Not really.
With no way to pay for them except maybe to print money.
Not really, because 4 years ago under Bill Clinton, as I think you probably know, Jim, he extended the Social Security program from 2027 to 2042 by using money from the massive surpluses he had, which he had at the same time as he was decreasing poverty. It all worked.
Study the issue. $70 trillion Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, there is no trick you can play. There's nothing you can do. If they do not reform the system, if they do not do something about the liabilities, it's going to destroy our economy.
$70 trillion over what?
Liberal or conservative.
Well,
it will destroy the economy,
nah.
And they're not doing anything about
$70 trillion.
Republicans,
it's a crazy figure.
Are unwilling to confront the issue.
You've given a figure for a century from 2042 to 2142, right?
Yeah. No, I'm talking about...
How many years? $70 trillion.
Fifty years.
50 years.
Over the next 50 years.
At the rate at which George Bush spends. I agree.
It's got nothing to do with George Bush.
Sure it does.
These programs have been in place for 40 years.
And they were working just fine before Bush messed up with them.
Huh?
They were working just fine before George Bush started to fuck with them.
When the baby boom generation retires, they're
sure
not
they
going
are.
To work anymore because you'll only have two people working for every person who's getting Medicare and Social Security, and there will not be enough money to pay the benefits that have been promised.
That's simply false.
It's not a matter of opinion.
It is. I agree. It's a matter of fact.
And politicians, Democrats and Republicans, will not deal with it.
Jim, I'm sorry. You're dead wrong. We could do a program on Social Security. The quick and easy answer is that Social Security, even in 2042, will pay out 80% of its benefits, even if all these terrible things come to pass. The real problem is our budget deficit, which in 2001 went far more in the red than Social Security, and that is entirely due to this administration. We've got to take a break, but when I come back, I want to focus on poverty and race, because I want to hear an answer to Jim, to my question of, if you got a guy in a race and you put a weight on him for several miles and he's now a mile behind, it's just removing the weight enough, or do you need some, dare I say, affirmative action to help bring back equal opportunity? If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. We'll be right back after this.
Say, do you or a member of your family suffer from acne? Do you take prescription drugs and get little or no relief? Is your skin always dry and itching and peeling due to the side effects of chemicals and drugs? Do you have trouble looking in the mirror and being happy with what you see? Do you avoid going out in the world due to your acne? Are you spending ridiculous amounts of money with little or no results? Well, you may find relief. Relief is available to most sufferers online at healthstarproducts.com. It's guaranteed, or you get your money back, and you've got 90 days to decide. Look it up for yourself online at HealthStar Products, H-E-A-L-T-H, healthstarproducts.com. Go to www.healthstarproducts.com and find out about the acne program. Find out if it works for you or a member of your family. If it doesn't, you get your money back.
Medulloblastoma, hyperdiploidy, posterior mediastinum, Shimada classification. When an oncologist talks to you about childhood cancer, it could sound like a foreign language. CureSearch.org is a website that can help. It connects you to the doctors and scientists whose collaborative research has turned childhood cancer from a nearly incurable disease to one with an overall cure rate of 78%. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
What some people are saying about your morning with Jim Harrington and friends.
Hello, this is Bill, and I'm calling to talk to you about the good show on the morning radio. You see, it's your morning with your friend Jim Harrington and friends. I also want to say the Coca-Cola and the Pepsi and the Jell-O pudding pops, and Theo is my son, and Claire is my wife, and there's no groping, you see.
Every day, enjoy your morning
on the Talkstar Radio Network. From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest today is Jim Greenfield, host of the Jim Greenfield Show, which precedes mine on the Talkstar Radio Network. And during the commercial, I guess I was musing about the difference between a Democrat and a Republican. As I see it, a Democrat is someone who believes the government can help people, works hard, actually makes a profit, which is what a surplus is, in their business, makes a profit. At the same time, poverty goes down. People are so well off that the only thing Republicans can think to criticize is that Democrat's sex life. Then a Republican comes in office, spends more, spends it more inefficiently, spends on all its cronies, and then says, look, I've increased government and gotten less as a result. Obviously, government is not the answer. And you know what? He's right. Bush government isn't the answer. Jim, I know you disagree.
Well, no, you're wrong. I totally agree with you. As a matter of fact, during the Monica Lewinsky scandals, I was on the radio defending Bill Clinton, saying that the Republicans were barking up the wrong tree and making a terrible mistake, that they shouldn't impeach him, and
that
your sex life is nobody's business.
I'm glad to hear that.
Whether you're president of the United States or anybody else, which of course I attributed to the real cause of it, which was that the feminists had gotten this sexual harassment thing through, and lo and behold, it boomeranged on him, and it went after, it destroyed, almost destroyed their guy. But that's another issue.
It is another issue. Let me ask you about that.
Slamming him hard, because I don't know what a compassionate conservative is. It looks to me like a compassionate conservative is a liberal. Bush has been, I would think liberals should love the guy. He's been favoring a lot of big government spending programs.
He doesn't spend what he wants to spend.
He's not a tax and spend liberal. He's a tax cut and spend liberal.
Right, but Jim, just so you're clear.
Taxes. But can we talk about the point you raised before?
I will get back to the
guys in the race.
I definitely want to get to that. I just want to say that liberals don't love big spending. That's false. We want spending in a way that helps people get out of poverty and do things like that. We don't want spending to go to Exxon.
You want to help people get out of poverty. Why don't you try to create the economic conditions that can enable them to get a job instead of putting them on welfare?
Well, that's not something that liberals support.
That's a better way to try to get people out of poverty by having the government give them money?
No, I think the government can do what they did in the GI Bill. They can give them education. They can give them low interest loans. They can give them home ownership, job skills, small business formation skills. They can do exactly what they did for white folks in the 40s and 50s. The GI Bill is a very liberal thing. It was Harry S. Truman.
Jack Kemp stuff.
Jack Kemp stuff is tax cuts. Jack Kemp stuff is empowerment zones. Jack Kemp is you pay the big company.
I'm not arguing that there's no role for the government in education.
State
and local government, it's totally appropriate for them to be involved in education.
Good.
And if you really want to get an education system that works to help poor people out of poverty, you'll support vouchers.
And you even need busing, don't you? You need to mix poor and middle class students together.
Vouchers.
Well, but the problem with vouchers is it tends to self-select. If you have vouchers...
Let's talk about these guys in the race. You mentioned...
Yeah, let's talk about the race.
No.
Perfectly fair, except we're coming up on a break. So make your first part of your argument, and then I promise I'll give you time after the break.
You got two guys in a race.
Right.
Okay, you got the white guy and the black guy. The
right.
The black guy's got a 20-pound weight on his back, and
right.
So the white guy's beating him in the race.
Right.
Right? That's racism.
Right.
Okay?
Hundreds of years.
Government policy in a large portion of the United States up until the 1960s.
Right, we agree so far.
Okay, so I say take the weight off of the black guy so he can compete fairly.
So do I.
Yeah, but that's not fair because the white guy's already got a big lead on
him. Exactly.
My problem is you guys You want affirmative action. You want to take that black guy, not only move the black guy up to where the white guy is, you want to put the weight on the white guy's shoulders, and then the black guy, not only are you going to put him ahead, you're going to put his son and his grandson a couple of laps ahead and to compensate for what happened to him.
No, I just
That's
want...
what affirmative action is.
I just want equal opportunity. I guarantee you, the moment that blacks have the same amount of poverty as whites, I'll be the first to say that affirmative action should end. We have to take a break. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-528-TALK. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is Newsbreak. According to officials in southeast Louisiana, it's still far too dangerous for many residents to return to their homes. FEMA says it has more than $600 million to help evacuees pay for temporary housing while they wait for the all-clear so they can go home. The president made his seventh inspection tour of the hurricane-ravaged Gulf Coast today, seeing for himself the destruction in Beaumont, Texas, and Lake Charles, Louisiana. New Orleans Police Superintendent Eddie Compass has announced his retirement to take effect in 30 to 45 days. The New Orleans Police Department was sharply criticized in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Former head of FEMA told a congressional investigating committee he made mistakes in preparing for and responding to Hurricane Katrina. On Wall Street, the Dow was up 13 points today to 10,456. NASDAQ dropped 5 to 2116. There's more news at usaradio.com.
So you had the big meeting yesterday. The boss was cranky from 6 hours on the red eye. Dan left the presentation in the cab, and you sat on a 4-inch window ledge for 90 minutes.
Next time, web conference with Microsoft Office Live Meeting and have a more productive meeting without leaving your office. Present to clients around the globe, collaborate in real time, even get instant feedback by taking a live poll.
Try it free for 14 days at Microsoft.com/WorkLive. That's Microsoft.com/WorkLive or call 1-877-MEET-WEB today.
You've heard it's all about the O. Well, what does that mean? It means you have one place to go for a luxurious lifestyle. Overstock.com offers the web's best deals on designer fashions, books, music, sporting goods, bedding, assisted living products, all up to 70% off, plus affordable vacation packages and an auction department with hard-to-find one-of-a-kind items. Live operators 24/7, and it's $2.95 shipping on every order. Simple, safe, and easy. Overstock.com.
I'm Terry Graydon with our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
A small preliminary study published in the Journal of Urology suggests that lifestyle may alter the progression of prostate cancer. Dr. Dean Ornish and colleagues from the University of California at San Francisco recruited 93 men who had early stage prostate cancer. These men had decided to opt for watchful waiting rather than surgery. They randomized the men to receive either the usual care or to follow the Ornish regimen of a low-fat, vegetarian diet, regular exercise, and stress management. After a year, the PSA levels, prostate-specific antigen, had risen 6% in the control group, but were down 4% in the Ornish group. Although more research is necessary before doctors will be comfortable recommending this affordable approach, the results are very intriguing. This is Joe Graydon and the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. In the wake of Hurricane Katrina, a poll was taken nationwide of white folks and black folks. And the question was asked if the government would have given more help, helped the people suffering by Hurricane Katrina better if they had been white. And blacks said two-thirds of all black people in America said yes, the government would have reacted faster, would have reacted better if the victims had been white, and less than 20% of whites said that. What causes this perception among blacks that the government just doesn't give a damn about them? Let me give you some facts that might cause that perception. There was the people holed up at the convention center where people were dying, literally without food and water. You had people, a 10-year-old with asthma, who they watched him die and his body was just left there. Meanwhile, the Louisiana National Guard is holed up in another room with tanks to protect their position, and they don't come in to help. A SWAT team comes in to save two white women and leave. I'm sure that didn't leave a good impression. And the blacks are pleading on live TV, come, please, help save us, at a time when the head of FEMA and the head of Homeland Security don't even know, apparently, that they're there. Can you understand why blacks might feel that they're getting a raw deal, that if they were white and in Mississippi, as Trent Lott was, they might get a visit from their president? Jim Greenfield is my guest. He hosts the Jim Greenfield Show preceding mine. Jim, can you understand why blacks particularly might be angry in the wake of Hurricane Katrina?
Yeah, but now, do you agree with them?
Yes.
I mean, do you feel that the reason that the government's response was so inadequate was because of racism?
Race and poverty together.
You both think it was racist?
As well as because they were poor. I think the government cares less and does less for its poor citizens and its black citizens than its rich and its white citizens.
That the government is just kind of universally incompetent.
Not at all.
I found that in my dealings with government, and I'm a upper middle class white guy, and I find that in my dealings with the government, they're totally incompetent and they don't care about me.
Social Security seems to work well.
Now, if I were black, and some of the experiences that I've had dealing with government officials or police, for that matter, where they treated me badly and were abusive and neglectful, if I were black, I might very well have thought, you know, they're treating me this bad because I'm black. But since I'm not black, I guess I'd say, well, I guess it's because I'm Jewish. Or maybe it's just because government bureaucracy tends to be inept.
Honestly, Jim, I haven't had those experiences.
Maybe that's the explanation
that you've had, but I do know statistics show that police are more likely to arrest a black drug user than a white drug user. They're more likely to go into black communities to look for crimes than white communities to look for crimes. And whites, as far as the statistics I've seen, don't use drugs any more or less than blacks.
Well,
they may use different drugs.
On the other hand, I once had a bad experience with the police, which I won't get into all the particulars, but it was a traffic stop, and the DMV had screwed up and improperly invalidated my license, and I ended up on my stomach on the ground with the police having their weapons drawn on me. Okay,
that's pretty wrong.
Sitting in the back of a police car for 45 minutes, and I called my lawyer and I said, you know, I want to sue them. And he said, well, if you were black or minority, you could win a lawsuit against them. But you know, you're a white guy. Forget it. It's not going to go anywhere.
Obviously, that's wrong.
So,
and I don't know what you did.
In other words, I could say that they violated my rights, but I couldn't claim that it was because of race. Now, if I were black, there's no question in my mind. If I were black, I would have thought these guys are abusing me because I'm black. But they abused me anyway.
Jim,
so
here's the question.
What's in people's minds?
Here's the question.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
Jim, if you were that guy in the race and you saw the government put that 20 pounds on your back and forcibly keep you behind all those years,
yeah,
okay, you shouldn't be surprised. I think we both agree that you think when that pack is lifted and you see that, for example, whites have 10 times the wealth that black people do, and that wealth obviously is passed down generation to generation. You have people like Bush who don't believe in estate taxes, believe in this sort of permanentist aristocracy. You can see how you might think the man might be out to get you. Don't you think? Don't you think that our country?
Clarence Page on the other day, who you know who he is. He's a black columnist for the Chicago Tribune, I believe. And he said, well, in 1965, two-thirds of blacks lived below the poverty level.
Right.
And today, only 25% of blacks live below the poverty level.
Right.
So, you know, depending on what numbers you look at, there have been a lot of signs that black people have made tremendous progress.
They have, but they've regressed.
Of government-instituted racism was lifted off their backs.
They have, but they've regressed in the last 5 years. And I guess my question is this. Don't you think that we as Americans, and I don't care whether your forefathers had slaves, mine certainly didn't, don't you think that we as Americans owe a special responsibility to two, and I would say only two groups of people, one to Native Americans, since we're living on their land, and number two to descendants of slaves. Not all blacks, Colin Powell, descendant of West Indies, you know, I no special circumstances, but since our country, according to its law, according to its constitution, so mistreated these groups of people, don't we have a special responsibility to see that their descendants at least get equal opportunity, a decent education, a decent loan?
You get into a very, very dangerous area when you start identifying groups and saying that a particular group was mistreated by the society in the past, and therefore the government now is going to give that group special treatment. No, I'm sorry.
Well, let me give you an example, Jim.
The principle that you learned in kindergarten is the best way to deal with this. And that is, two wrongs don't make a right.
Well, I don't know. In the law, we have reparations.
Black people may have been discriminated against in the past. That doesn't mean that you want to correct that problem by discriminating today against white people who didn't do anything wrong.
Well, let me give you an example, Jim, just today, just to give you an example. It is well known, it's documented, I just read an article about it in the Washington Post, that for loans, for home loans, okay, on average, blacks and whites at the same economic level, okay, not people of different economic levels, blacks and whites at the same economic level, blacks pay a significantly higher interest rate, and significant, I mean statistically significant, over whites. Blacks pay about 1 point more than whites at every level of income. Now, don't you think the government should step in to that private enterprise and say, you know what, there's a problem here, and I don't really care what's in your heart. I don't care whether we can prove prejudice or not, but it's unfair that somebody making $20,000 has to pay a higher interest rate just because they're black than a white guy making $20,000.
I've got an idea, Mark. I've got a better idea, Mark. How about you and I start a bank and we go into the lending money to black people business, and our ads are, we lend to blacks at the same rate as whites. And let's see how much money we can make making those loans.
I fail to see your point. Obviously, if that would work and there weren't prejudice and capitalism, we'd have problems today.
No,
I mean, we wouldn't have the problems today.
What I'm saying to you is, if banks are making money, lending money to white people, and they can lend money to blacks with the exact same risk, at the same rate of interest, but they're not doing it, that means that there's an opportunity, there's a wrinkle in the market there. And we could open a bank and make a killing making those loans at the lower interest rate that the other banks aren't making.
Let me tell you why it happens that way, Jim. Let me tell you why it happens. The reason it happens, and it's not just with loans, it's also with job opportunities. Fully one-third of American employers and studies have shown that if they have the exact same resume and you put a black face instead of a white face, they hire the white over the black. There's a reason for this. The reason is that a lot of people don't get their jobs based on merit. A lot of people don't get their loans based on merit. A lot of jobs in America today are not meritocratic. They're based on who you know. And whites have...
I've applied for many bank loans because I'm in the real estate investing business, so I do a lot of it. And you know what? I do it over the phone. They
okay.
don't know what color I am.
I'll tell you something. It's broader. It's broader than bank loans.
They look at your tax return. They look at your income. They look at your assets. They look at your
and they look at your name.
And bloom, they tell you what your terms of your loan are.
And they look at your name.
It's done by formula. So
now it's not done by formula. I'll tell you something. It's broader than just loans. And I have to take a break soon. But it's jobs too. It's a lot of it is based on who you know, and there's no question that if you're a child like George W. Bush,
yes,
of a rich father who can put you into all these businesses that lose millions of dollars, you know people, and you can get ahead more than a kid from the ghetto. We have to take a break. We have callers on the line. Okay, I promise, Jim, I will give you a full response after the break. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-528-TALK. We'll be right back after this.
If you have more than $7,500 in credit card debt, listen to these shocking facts. Debt can ruin your life. A great number of all marriages end in divorce due to financial problems. Many American families are only a few paychecks away from bankruptcy. There are secret programs that credit card companies don't want you to know about that will eliminate your debt. If you are drowning in credit card debt, there is a way out. Debt Relief of America can negotiate directly with your creditors to eliminate up to 60% of your credit card debt. Learn how to avoid bankruptcy and get more cash in your pocket. Call Debt Relief of America for a free debt analysis by one of their debt relief specialists. There is absolutely no cost or obligation. Call 800-936-1264. 800-936-1264. For your free information, call now. 800-936-1264. 800-936-1264.
Do you sell dietary supplements? If so, you may know that the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission regulate your sales presentations. Violation of the federal rules can lead to stiff penalties. You really must know the law. Fortunately, help is just a phone call away. Law Talk Incorporated has produced a CD series. 4 CD interviews with renowned attorney Jonathan W. Emord. that explain the legal limits on sales presentations. The CD series guides you through FDA and FTC regulation, explaining the law that governs sales presentations, website content, and health claims, as well as global restrictions on supplement sales. This is a must-buy for network marketers and supplement companies alike. To obtain the CD series, call 1-888-RU-FREE-1. 1-888-RU-FREE-1. That's 1-888-783-7331. Call today.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing poverty and race in the wake of Katrina, problems and solutions. My guest is Jim Greenfield, host of the Jim Greenfield Show, which precedes mine on the Talkstar Radio Network. Jim, true or false to this statement?
Hey, wait, aren't you going to let me respond to the point you made before the break? You said you would.
I do, but I think this sort of sets up the point, and then you can respond as long as you like, all right? True or false? Jobs are given not just based on merit, but also based on who you know, and that because of the long history of racism and segregation patterns in America, blacks simply don't know as many people in high places on average as whites do.
True, and it has always been thus. And you know, wealthy people from wealthy families, always have the advantage. They have the contacts. That's the way it's always been. My guess is it's going to be that way for thousands of years to come. But now, let me respond to your point about discrimination in jobs.
Yeah.
And you say that if a white person and a black person apply for the same job, they have the same resume, that more often than not, the white guy gets the job.
That's right.
And
that's what studies have shown.
True. But you know something, Mark? I used to know a guy who suffered far worse discrimination than that. And, you know, I'll tell you how he overcame it. Do you know why so many Jews of a generation or two ago were in business for themselves?
Sure, people wouldn't hire them.
Exactly. And that's what happened to my grandfather. He knew, and he explained this to us, that in his generation, which was a long time, this was 100 years ago, the young men of his generation knew that if they went to work for the Protestants, they went to work for the Christians, they knew they weren't going to get anywhere. They were going to be in dead-end jobs. And so many Jews went into business for themselves precisely because if they were ambitious young guy, they knew they would be discriminated against. So they went into business for themselves, and lo and behold, what happened? The Jews became far more successful on average financially than the Christians because they became capitalists. They became entrepreneurs. They overcame the discrimination. Now, what government programs helped them out? Did they have affirmative action? Did they have welfare? Did they have subsidized housing, food stamps? None of it.
You know what they had?
They did it on their own.
You know what they had, Jim?
Education.
They had education. They had more.
Right.
They had something called HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. They looked out for each other. Jews helped Jews. Those Jews that were already successful helped other Jews. There are huge cultural differences, as I'm sure you know, Jim, between the Jewish community and the black community. There's a difference between a people that wasn't allowed to own land and in the shtetls in Eastern Europe and therefore focused on intellectual pursuits, and a people whose families were torn apart and were brought here as slaves and not even allowed to read. There's huge cultural differences that in our modern economy where reading is more important than backbreaking activity, and I'm sure that for those cultural differences, the average black guy can beat the average Jewish guy in sports. But unfortunately, that doesn't achieve much in our society. There are cultural reasons, and they're due precisely to our history of slavery and racism that put the average descendant of slave behind the ball from the average descendant of Jewish immigrants. And you know that.
That's right. That's right. But we've seen other immigrant groups, most recently, I guess, the Vietnamese, who came over here in the 1970s.
The same tradition of education.
Education. So therefore, if you look at the logic of what you just said,
right,
doesn't that point you in the direction of saying, look, the solution to the problem is not government bureaucracy, handout programs, or plans to redistribute wealth. The problem is not a lack of money. The problem is cultural. The problem is education. And the solution, therefore, which, as I say, Alan Greenspan has also argued, the solution to inequality, the solution to the problem of poverty is education.
I agree with you.
Not the welfare state.
I agree with you. I haven't supported.
Well,
I told you I supported Clinton's workfare program.
If we kept going, eventually we'd disagreeing with
you. Maybe so. You know, Maimonides, to cite a Jewish philosopher from the Middle Ages, argued that there were different levels of charity, and the lowest level of charity was a handout by someone who didn't want to give it, and the highest level was, as they say, teaching a man to fish so that he knew how to fish and you didn't have to keep giving him fish. There's no question that the best way to get someone on their own is to teach them to be on their own. And I read a recent study, actually, in the New York Times just a few days ago about the town of Raleigh, North Carolina. Apparently, it's in a very large county, Wake County, and they've continued to do busing at a time when virtually no other school district in the country does busing. And they bus these poor kids from the ghetto to schools with middle-class kids. And lo and behold, the people that were in the ghetto that had the cultural pathologies of the ghetto, the belief that they can't possibly succeed and that education doesn't matter, and they were with kids who believe that education does matter. And by mixing the kids together, desegregating schools, yes, the evils of busing, people learned that education actually helps. It seems to me, though, that that one of the main things conservatives want to do is they want to write off the ghetto. They want to write off the people of New Orleans.
I hear Bill Cosby talking about this.
Okay.
You know, that the black people got to start taking charge of their own fate and educating their kids and emphasizing the value of education and not making it, oh, you're acting like whitey because you want to get educated.
Absolutely.
Well, where the leadership, where's the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons instead of complaining and sniping, complaining about racism? Where are they? Why can't they show leadership within their own communities and say, look, we got to get our communities turned around ourselves. We can't depend on whitey to do it. We can't depend on the white government bureaucracy to do it. We got to do it ourselves, and we got to make sure that our kids are educated so that they will achieve equality, because that's the only way they're going to do it.
How about a partnership? I find conservatives are always blaming the victim, and some liberals are saying that it's not about self-responsibility. How about a partnership where we bring back busing? Is that okay with you, Jim? And actually mix...
I don't care about busing one way or the other. I mean, you know, I guess I wouldn't want my kids riding on buses for long distances, but other than that, I don't really particularly have a problem
with
it.
See, I would argue that the great...
That's the answer.
I would argue that the great case of Brown versus Board of Education is unfortunately gone backward, and that although we don't have legal segregation today, we have de facto segregation, and it's not just on grounds of race, it's also on grounds of poverty. And because we have poor kids going to school with poor kids, and by the way, I think a voucher program makes it worse because it leads to self-selection. The Catholic school says, I'm not going to take that poor kid who's got a learning disabled. If you bring kids together, then they can learn from each other, and then comes a society, my kind of society, where everyone looks out for everybody. I'll give you a chance to respond. I promise, Jim, after the break. 877-528-TALK. I got a caller, too. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Ted Danson. Picture a place where everyone knows your name. Well, at Shriners Hospitals for Children, all kids are treated like family. Shriners are recognized as one of the world's best hospital systems for orthopedic and burn medicine, as well as their leading-edge research and teaching programs. And their care is provided totally free of charge. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
There are times and occasions when only roses will do. Roses247.com searches rose growers all over the world for the season's very best and most special roses at the most reasonable prices. For this week's greatest selection of fresh, beautifully cultivated roses, chosen to convey just exactly the sentiment you want to express, get online to www.roses247.com. We've done all the screening and shopping for you. It's fast, easy, and safe to order online, just as hundreds of thousands do all the time. So for birthdays, anniversaries, special remembrances, or just to say you are very much loved, type in roses247.com. We're open around the clock at roses247.com. Roses say it best.
Hi, my name is Aaron. I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We only have a few minutes left in this mammoth two-hour debate I've had with Jim Greenfield on poverty and race. It's a mammoth question requiring a mammoth debate. And I don't know that we've solved the problems here, but I think we've come to some surprising agreements as well as to some strong disagreements. I've done a lot of talking, so I'm going to give Jim a chance to respond, and then if there's time, we'll go to the caller. Jim, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Well, you know, you raised the issue of vouchers. You said you don't think vouchers is the answer. But you know that polls have showed that the majority of inner-city black parents do think that vouchers is an answer and support vouchers. Why? Because they see and they know they're living it. Their kids are trapped in these horrendous inner-city schools, and the teachers' unions are trying to block the vouchers, which is their ticket out. That means their kids, the parents that care about their kids' education but are poor and live in poor inner-city areas where the schools are bad, they want their kids to be able to choose a better school, and that's the solution. It's the only way you're going
to
help it.
To me.
I don't know why. You know, liberals, if conservatives weren't in favor of it, liberals would be, except, for, of course, that you got the little problem with the teachers' unions don't like it because they're afraid that, you know, those bad teachers are going to lose their jobs and the bad schools are going to get shut down by it.
You know, I don't think that that's true. I don't know which poll you're referring to, because if it were, then in jurisdictions that are primarily poor and black, you would see more voucher programs. But to me, it's a broader question, the voucher problem. To me, what the vouchers say is the same thing they said to the people of New Orleans. It's, if you have the means, get out. If you have a car, get out of New Orleans, let the rest drown. If you are a parent that actually is focusing on education and not a parent that's in jail or on drugs, then get your kid out of that system and leave the rest to a life of poverty, gangs, guns, and no good education. I say help all Americans. E pluribus unum, equality under the law. I don't care, five-year-old, if your mother's on crack and your dad's in jail, to use a stereotype, it's not the five-year-old's fault. And if we would help all schools in America and not just skim off the best, I think we'd do better. We got time just a little bit for a caller. Dave from Northern California, you called back. Briefly make your point. Dave, are you there? If not, I'll get right back to Jim. Dave, last try. Okay, Jim, we got a minute and a half.
Look, if you've got a kid whose mother's on crack and his father's in jail, I hate to say it, but it's probably a lost cause. The only thing you can do for that kid is get him out of that home.
I agree.
Get him into a foster home. Get him, put him up for adoption or whatever. But the notion that you're going to say, well, look, you're going to have some kids whose home life is so bad that their parents don't care whether they get educated, and therefore we're not going to let the kids whose parents do care get out of those horrible schools and get into good schools, that doesn't make any sense.
Why don't we make all the schools good?
You said, well, gee, you can only help half of that population, so we're not going to help any of them because unless we can help all of them. Maybe you can help all of them.
I think we can.
But why not help the ones who can be helped? And the way to help them is to give them choice, give them a chance to choose their own schools for their kids. And what's going to happen is that schools are going to see that they're going to lose half their students if they don't start competing and get into line. And so even the bad schools are going to start getting better, because they're going to need to, otherwise they know they're going to get shut down. They're all going to be out of work. That's competition. It works in the private sector. It could work for schools. And liberals like you who care about poor people should be supporting this more than anybody.
I think we can help all of them. I think it's exactly what the New York Times article showed happened in Raleigh, North Carolina, where you had a school district that cared about all the kids, didn't skim off the best kids, didn't say, oh, you don't have a learning disability, we'll take you. You're dyslexic and poor, sorry, you're not allowed to learn. If you bring all the kids together in what I believe is truly the spirit of Brown versus Board of Education, you can educate us all. Jim, I'm afraid that's the end of the debate. It's been a great 2 hours. We will definitely do it again sometime. Thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop. Tomorrow, JimGreenfieldShow.com is Jim's show. Tomorrow is a very controversial topic. It's called Homophobic Science. My guest is Paul Cameron, who has authored a lot of these studies and has been kicked out of psychological associations because of it. Tune in 7 tomorrow.